Over the last couple of months, I've been designing a new product, and I didn't think that it was an AI product, but the more that I work on it, the more that I can't help but notice all of the little ways that LLMs could be used. But these opportunities are only visible if you know what the materials are capable of.
I need to understand the material I'm working with in the same way that, like, carpenters understand wood really well, right? And like architects understand if you're gonna build a five-story building, like you need to know what materials you're gonna put in the support pipe so that it doesn't fall down. Even if the thing you are designing is like pixels in Figma or seems to be to you, what you are actually designing is a live interactive system. There's a ton the web can do that we don't take advantage of because designers don't know what's possible, I think.
That's Maggie Appleton talking about the value of understanding how code works. And I think you can apply that same logic to AI as well. I mean, you don't have to be able to train your own model yourself in the same way that most designers don't have to write API calls. But having a baseline understanding of how things work allows you to see what's possible.
See, I knew nothing about language models and AI. I was like a normal human, right? I started getting into it. And that was really important for me to then be able to, once I joined a team, understand what was possible, like what the limitations are.
A big part of our role as designers is asking what if. I mean, we're the ones who are responsible for raising the ceiling of what something can be. It reminds me of how Michael Wandelmeyer talked about the art of the possible.
Looking for the art of the possible. So when challenged with a very difficult task, not trying to block it in to say, like, what is it that we can do given these constraints, but really to ask the question, like, I wonder, like, what if we could do this? Is that possible? Like, let's try it. And I think that that's a really intangible thing, but it is born of a place that you really are aiming for the highest possible end outcome and are willing to fight tooth and nail for that, rather than looking for the most pragmatic solution.
And historically, our starting point for figuring out what's possible has been working backward from user problems or maybe business objectives. And then, you know, we use different processes to help the team narrow in on a solution. But times are changing. And that's why I love this clip from George Kettenberg, who's a designer at Humane.
I kind of look at it as this, like, alien space metal that has crash landed on the planet. And it's a new material. It's like a new thing that as designers, we get to work with.
We can't ignore this space metal. I mean, it's here to stay, which means designers aren't just working backward from user problems anymore. We're also working backward from what this new technology makes possible, because we're entering a world where the products that ignore AI are the most likely to go extinct. Now, this might be a little bit of a red flag because, you know, it starts to feel like solutions in search of a problem, but that's why I want to highlight this clip from Joel Lewenstein, who's the head of product design at Anthropic, which is the company behind Claude.
I think solutions in search of a problem is such an interesting phrase. I think it's generally felt to be derogatory, pejorative. Like, people say that as a sort of like, you shouldn't do that. And certainly, like, the sort of capital D design school would say, understand user problems, start, anchor there. Any good design crit starts with, here are the user problems. That's what endures, right? Like, that is the technology changes, but people's problems stay the same. I've come to see solutions in search of a problem as, like, not a dirty word at all. I think as long as you just lean into it, saying, like, there's the germ of something here and we're going to explore it. I think the only thing that really, really matters is that eventually the problem and the solution link up together, so you're solving a real problem for a real person. But I've come to be pretty agnostic as to, like, which end you start from. And this may be uncomfortable when I started, for sure. We're a very, like, prototype heavy culture. We're a very explore things out of our own passion and intuition culture. This comes from our researchers, from our engineers, from our designers. And my sort of, like, capital D design brain would see all these prototypes and I'm like, but what's the user problem? And give me a user journey. And I've had to sort of quiet that a little bit, and just not to be too cheesy, but, like, it's the Justin Timberlake line from The Social Network. It's like, we don't know what it can be. We just know that it's cool. And, like, not all of it is going to be useful, but I think there is something deeply valuable to just sitting with something that is cool and compelling and you can see the germ of something.
Now, obviously, Anthropic is at the bleeding edge of technology right now, but that's why I started this episode with my own example. Because, like I said, I'm not working on an AI product, but I would be capping the ceiling of my product if I didn't experiment with Perplexity or Vision APIs. And like Joel says, the only thing that matters is at some point your designs have to solve user problems, but you don't necessarily have to start there.
I have a diagram in my head of like, you know, a double diamond design process and sort of like tendrils coming out from the solution end and eventually finding their way to the problem end. I think that's okay.
And that's why my plan right now is to just expose myself to AI as a material as much as I possibly can. I mean, tinker with new products, spend a Saturday morning making a random thing before my kid wakes up. Because in order to be the best designer I can be, I need to be able to see what's possible. And of course, talking to people like George helps too.
The only way you really understand a material super well is by just experimenting with it and like trying stuff and just like continuing to push the envelope of, well, what can this thing do? You know, like imagine if you had the first time you saw wood, you're like, what do I do with wood? You know, and you would start trying things and you'd be like, oh, if I bend it this way, it breaks. But if I like heat it up with steam and bend it around this other thing, I can make these like really cool curved edges that you just have to go deep on these materials and just try a lot of stuff to see where they break and to see where they don't break.
Real quick message, and then we can jump back into it. So this new product called Genway has totally changed the way that I do research. It uses AI-powered interviewers to help you gather rich, qualitative data at basically an infinite scale. You can even interview people while they use your Figma prototypes. You just tell the AI what you're hoping to test, and it will have a dynamic conversation with each person as they're going through your prototype. You should see the quality of the follow-up questions that the AI asks. It is really something. And the best part is they just introduced a self-serve onboarding, so you can get started right away. And they're even offering 2 months free for Dive Club listeners. Just head to dive.club/Genway to get that special offer. That's Genway. If you've been listening to this show for a bit, then you've heard me profess my love for Raycast multiple times by now. So I want to highlight a couple people who started using Raycast after hearing about it on Dive Club. The first is Rex Harris. He says, Raycast is the tool that most shapes how he uses his computer and keeps him in flow. The next is Greg Hunton. He called it a life-changing product and says, every time he pulls a thread on something in Raycast, it wildly deepens the power and experience of using his computer. I couldn't agree more, and I can't recommend Raycast enough. It's totally free to start. Just head to dive.club/Raycast to check it out. That's R-A-Y-C-A-S-T. Okay, now onto the episode. Now I want to address two doubts. First, you might think this is beyond your capabilities, and I promise it's not. I mean, before hitting record on this, I read a tweet from David Wong who says he builds an MVP for a personal CRM between Call of Duty respawns. And it's really, really easy to make something, I mean, anything. And once you get a little bit of momentum, then it becomes addicting. And the second thing you might be thinking is that you're already too far behind. You know, other people have already run ahead and figured things out, which is why I want to end with this last clip from Joel.
Kyle Turman has this great phrase. They say, even if the models never got better, even if Claude 3 was it, Claude 3.5 was it for all time, there's probably still like years of design work left because there's just all these things that the model can do that people don't know how to get. It just is, it's opaque. It requires this like dark art of prompting. There's a lot of like interesting design problems.
We're entering a world where whether you like it or not, you're probably gonna be an AI product designer soon. And hopefully this show can be a resource to help us all figure out what that means. That's all for now. I will see you next week.